Welcome back to the Rude Dude Podcast, the show that takes some weight off your plate, puts some pep in your step, and reminds you that you are loved. It is I, one of your hosts, Cameron the Cree Davis. Got a nice little special guest today, but it is just me. I know that all of our West Virginia listeners are all probably pretty upset about that. They're like, fuck, man, why do I have to consistently listen to this California guy who says dude 24/7? Well, unfortunately, you're stuck with me today. Henry is out. Who knows what Henry's doing anymore? I couldn't tell you. It's like the 90s show Carmen Sandiego. Like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? That's Henry. He's off traveling abroad. Now he's in Colorado watching Rockies games. He's living the absolute life. It actually looks like he's having a pretty good time, if I was being completely honest with you. I'm actually a little bit jealous. He should be back next week. And as I'm sitting here roasting him, I think it's super funny. I was like, damn, he's you know, in Greece, and then now he's in Colorado. Fuck. Well, Hen, I got bad news for you. I forgot to tell you. I'm going to be in Fort Bragg next week. So you know what? You'll probably have a Hen-exclusive episode, everybody. Someday, you know, you'll get both of us again on a regular schedule. It's summertime. Life goes on. One quick thing before I jump in with my very special guest this week is I wanted to thank Brian again for his wonderful episode. If you haven't listened to that, go back next week to last week's episode. He was incredible. Very insightful on, you know, the issues that, you know, people in addiction have and how they overcome that with parenting and all that jazz. It was really, really good. Hen cried per usual. It was emotional. And, you know, we really love to see that here at Rude Dude. This week, I have a very special guest, somebody who knows me now, what, going on like 10 years, saw me in my darkest days, is seeing me in my shining days, but also has a story herself. And one of the things we like to do here on this show is prove to everybody that, hey, everybody walking by you, has a story to tell, and everybody's got some things going on. And if we just sit down and have a conversation, we can probably find something that we can relate on. So this week, without further ado, I am actually going to introduce my mother-in-law, Sunshine Strong. And here she is. Sunshine, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm great, actually.
Yeah, for you audio listeners, Sunshine's sitting in this fantastic little swing in her backyard. The trees are rustling. As I know the layout of that backyard, I imagine squirrels might be running by during mid recording. We got it all going on over there. But anyways, Sunshine,
go ahead. It's 1,000 degrees in the summer here, so I got to take the little time I can enjoy the outside when I can.
Yeah, I agree. Now, it looks like you were getting after it. What did you do, a 10-mile hike yesterday? What are you doing?
Yeah, 10 miles up to Pyramid Peak. I didn't do the peak. I went to the lake and came back because I'm not insane, but it was 10 miles.
Okay. And here's my chance, just in case Morgan's boyfriend, Carl, listens to this show. What are you doing hiking in pants, Hoss? I looked at those pictures. What are you doing, brother? I mean, it's fucking hot. You're climbing mountains.
They were thin, like hiking pants. It wasn't jeans.
Yeah, people don't forget, dude. You put on some shorts, brother. I mean, dear Lord. That was like the first thing I noticed while looking at your post. I was like, okay, hey, oh, look, Sunshine out hiking again. Oh, hey, what the fuck is Carl wearing pants for? It's definitely nice to get outside today. Today's nice. It's a nice little breeze for all our East Coast listeners. But I wanted to bring you on because, you know, you and I have kind of talked in passing over the years, you know, and you've kind of hinted at you know, kind of a wild little upbringing. And me being around you for as long as I have, you have a very calm, cool, and collective way of carrying yourself. And I think it'd be interesting to just kind of pick your brain on how you've processed that type of stuff and see if, you know, there's anything wonderful and little nuggets in there that people could pick from. So how about you tell us a little bit about yourself? What do you, where were you born? Where were you from? All that jazz.
So the first misconception, and I think part of it is because it's easier for me to say when I first meet someone that I was adopted or I grew up with a foster family. Mm-hmm. When the truth is I was kidnapped when I was about 5.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So my mom, Nancy, was 16 and at a party when she met Mystery Dude and had her one encounter with straight sex, because my mom is a lesbian, at a party, and out I came. She had sex one time with a dude, and it resulted in me when she was 17. And I was born in Bay Area, San Leandro.
Okay.
And I think I was about 6 months old when she met Jan. And so that would make Nancy was 17 and Jan was probably, I think, 21-ish, 22. Okay. And they were both musicians in the Bay Area music scene. This is, you know, in the 70s. I was born in 72, so this is 73.
Okay.
You know, you could be a lot younger going into clubs and stuff. They weren't as stringent back then. Summer, love, all that. Anyway, they became a couple when I was about 6 months old.
Okay.
And I think that they were, I mean, keep in mind, you know, Jan was in her 20s and Nancy was a teenager. So, you know, not really great there.
Yeah.
But I think I was probably about two when the two of them broke up.
Okay.
And I continued to live with Jan at that point. I remember being three and living with Jan. And I would on the weekends go visit my mom, Nancy, who was living with her mom or something. I don't, you know, it's kind of vague.
Somebody, yeah.
Yeah. And then I went to school, preschool from Jan's house. I went to kindergarten from Jan's house. And I think I was probably, I don't know, four-ish when Jan said, you should just start calling me mom now. Uh-huh. And, you know, when you're four, you don't really have a lot of point of reference. Like, I didn't have any family. I didn't have any other, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends because I wasn't going out. So I'm like, okay, that's who I call mom now. I didn't have a point of reference that's weird.
Yeah.
And then, sorry if you hear the airplane going over.
No, it's okay.
And then when I finished kindergarten, so I think I was probably 5 and a half.
Okay.
Maybe six. I was still living in the Bay Area in San Leandro and seeing my mom on, you know, weekends. And then as soon as I finished kindergarten, Jan packed me up and moved and didn't tell anybody where she was going. And she spent the next, you know, my childhood moving every year and a half, sometimes twice in a year. And she was diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic, manic depressive, PTSD disorder. She was an alcoholic. She abused drugs. So she was in and out of mental facilities and on and off of meds. Mm-hmm. And so when she was on meds, she would be clear. And she was artistic. She was a painter. I think I get a lot of my artistic tendencies from her. Not necessarily, I mean, we didn't share blood, but I grew up around being around a lot of art, a lot of music.
Yeah.
But then, you know, as is kind of the nature of people with some of those disorders, is when they get clear on their meds, they're like, oh, I'm cured. And they stop taking them. And they stop taking them rapidly. So that just makes it even worse. And they kind of, you know, nosedive. And her particular psychosis was that she thought she was possessed by the devil.
Okay.
And so I grew up thinking she was possessed by the devil because, you know, I think I was eight when she came home from a mental facility, the first time she came home from a mental facility, and she told me that she had schizophrenia. I was eight. I don't know what that means. You know, they tried to explain it to me, but I didn't, you know, I didn't really know what it meant. And she, you know, when she was having her episodes, she told everybody she was possessed by the devil. And I was like, okay, my mom is possessed by the devil. And then I think her psychosis was kind of exacerbated by the fact that she had kidnapped me. Uh-huh. And so she was very paranoid about being found. So I was always told, you know, whenever I left the house, never let anybody take pictures of me. You know, when you're in group settings, always be cautious. You know, I was super anxious because she told me that it was because she was possessed by the devil that Satanists were after her. So you can imagine if somebody really was
holy by shit. The devil,
that the Church of Satan would want her, right?
Yeah, you would think.
And that by correlation, they would want the daughter of Satan, right? So that was put on me, right? So like I had to like...
Oh my God.
I told there's you, your so mind...
There's so much more. I was like, oh yeah, she's adopted and all this. For our listeners here, I'm sorry to interrupt. This is the first time I've ever fucking heard this. This is the craziest shit. This is like a fucking Dateline episode on roids.
I told you.
It oh my God.
More than you knew.
Please continue. There's one thing that is kind of crazy in this. I do got to say something. What are the odds that, you know, your biological mom, Nancy, who I've met, who I know, has sex one time with a man and gets pregnant? I just think that's crazy. I know that's kind of way off the cuff, and that was at the beginning of your story, but like,
yeah,
just like what are the odds of that? And look, here you are. I mean, thank God for it. But okay, right? So we're back to the Church of Satan is hunting you guys down.
Yeah, so like that was kind of put on me that whenever you go out of the house, make sure you're not in the news. Make sure nobody's taking pictures. You know, when you're out in social settings, if they're taking pictures, don't, you know, because if they find us, we have to move. And we moved all the time. So, I mean, I went to a different school every grade. And in high school, well, middle school, I only went to 7th grade. And then she got all freaked out about, I don't know, I was apparently randomly having sex.
Okay.
And so she withdrew me from school. So 8th grade, I was homeschooled. And then we moved. We finally got to the Sacramento area for freshman year of high school. Mm-hmm. I went to high school in Orangevale, and then I moved to Vacaville, and then I moved back to Orangevale all freshman year.
Wow.
And then after freshman year, I never went back to high school. She kind of screwed the screens on my windows and wouldn't let me out of the house because she was convinced I was doing drugs and having sex, which not at all. Not I didn't touch a drink. I didn't touch alcohol because I saw what it did to this crazy face, right? Mm-hmm. So behind the scenes, beyond all of that craziness, behind moving every year, moving sometimes in with family, her family, and moving out on our own. She could never hold a job because, you know, crazy.
Yeah.
We moved when I was about, I think I was 8. So it was right after I found out about the schizophrenia. We moved from the Bay Area up to Southern Oregon in with her mom and her sister and a bunch of cousins and her mom's new husband. And that was about the time, I don't know why, out of all, maybe it was because I wasn't really biologically a kid, but that's when the sexual abuse started with him.
Okay.
And that lasted, well, so in 6th grade, I wrote about it in a diary.
Okay.
I didn't say anything to anybody. I wrote about it in a diary. And somebody, Jan, found the diary and read it. And, oh my gosh, the vitriol that came out of the family at me, accusing me of making up stories about this wonderful person, was just, you know, I was 12, I was in 6th grade. And you can imagine, you know, how he felt bolstered after, you know, the secret came out and I wasn't believed, you know, so... Mm. He was a little more bold, I'll say.
Yeah.
So anyway, that kind of continued until I was that freshman year of high school. I was 15. Jan had hooked up with some other chick. Like she was constantly hooking up, and either I was living with a random girlfriend of the year, or she would go and move, and I would be left with my grandma and the. And her husband.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I got to interrupt you really quick.
Yeah.
So they completely took his side on that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And accused me of just being jealous and wanting attention. Like okay. I was jealous. And so
I mean, we don't got to go super in depth on that. I find that absolutely wild.
Yeah, I find that crazy. As a parent, yeah. Which is, I mean, this kind of leads to a lot of like the behavior, like my grandkids. I love my grandkids, but I never, like, I always ask. You notice, I always ask Addison, "Can I have a hug?" Because if at any point in time she doesn't want to give me a hug, she doesn't have to give me a hug. Like, she's, I want her to feel comfortable saying no to even people that she's close with.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. Okay, continue. Sorry, that makes me really fucking sad, actually.
I'm not trying to bum you out.
No. It's not like I'm bummed out. Like I find this story completely interesting. But I think it's you know, kind of like a testament to how many other people have had that exact same experience happen. You know what I mean? Throughout their entire lives.
Yeah, you never know what's out there having this experience.
Yeah, there's been some wonky shit that's happened around with me as well that I haven't really delved into on this podcast yet, and maybe I will one day. But I get where you're coming from there. Nothing on that level though, where you know, the evidence is found and oh hey, this is the child's fault. So yeah, please continue. I'm sorry that breaks my heart for little sunshine here.
Yeah. Little sunshine had a rough life. So we moved. I used to joke and say, you know, I could probably commit almost any crime and really get off with some mental excuse because I have everything in my background. It's ridiculous. So anyway, bounce back and forth all the time. We finally land freshman year of high school down here in Orangevale, and Jan is off living with her whatever lady du jour,
500th girlfriend of the week.
Yeah, who knows? Okay. And who happened to be interesting. Jan always hooked up with like previously married ladies. She was always there first. Like it's bizarre. So this woman was had been Mormon and had like 18 kids. It was crazy.
And the devil possessed woman got her. Come on over here to the dark side.
No, I don't know. She was very charismatic and very. She was just, she had an aura about her. You wanted to be around her, but she was fucking psycho.
Okay.
So anyway, I was living with my grandmother and her husband, and I was 15, and I was just like, I am fucking done. This is it. I put a lock on the inside of my bedroom door. And I was like, I don't care. And, you know, I got a lot of shit for it. Everybody was mad at me. And he told, oh my God, some stories that he said that about me that I, like, when everybody else was out of the house, that I was trying to seduce him. And like the fact that it was crazy. So I was 15. I couldn't get out, but I was like, my door was locked and, Jan wasn't there. And I started to work, I think at 16, I was working at a grocery store. Okay. And I was saving a bunch of money. Maybe I was getting close to 17. And he was from Alaska. He was an Eskimo.
Okay.
And like native, you know. And when you're a native from Alaska, you get a lot of stuff when you're there. You know, you get a lot of benefits and stuff. So the whole family decided to pick up and move to Alaska. And I was like, I'm not going with you crazies to Alaska.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this point, I was almost 17 and I had figured out Jan was not possessed by the devil. She was fucking psycho and she was an alcoholic and she was abusive and none of this was normal. And I was lucky that I wasn't blood related to any of them because, damn, I didn't want to pass on any of those genes and I needed to get out. And so I was saving as much money as I could. And Jan seemed to be understanding at first. She got it. You know, I had bought a lot of furniture in my room, prepping to get out. So like instead of a bed, I had a futon. Instead of a desk, I had a dining room table. You know, I was prepping.
Yeah.
And one day I came home from work and all of my clothes and possessions, but not like my furniture and stuff, but like all of the little things were just in the yard. Okay. I was 17. Everything was in the yard and with a note that said, you know, if you don't get it now, it's going to get taken away. You know, we're taking it to the dump. So I was like, all right.
Yeah.
Stuffed as much as I could in my little shitty car and, you know, made the best of it. You know, from then on, I couch surfed for a little while. I rented a room for a little while. And then, you know, kind of that's when shit started, you know, and I met my ex-husband at 19, got pregnant, got married at 20, mm-hmm. You know, and I think despite that marriage not working, I think a lot of people who suffer the abuse that I suffered and suffered through, I mean, just trauma after trauma after trauma through childhood,
yeah.
have a tendency to, when they, you know, they delve into really bad behaviors, you know, whether it's drugs, alcohol, lots of sex, whatever it is.
Yep.
And I think the fact that I jumped right into having kids and for me being a mom, I had the shittiest childhood ever. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I was hyper focused on making sure I didn't do any of that. Like I wanted the kids that I brought into the world to have them, you know, as long as it wasn't what I had, I was aces. And so,
yeah. Yeah.
I think having those kids so young and rapidly having, you know, cause my family grew really quickly. I was pregnant with Brandon, you know, 6 weeks after I had Ashley.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then really quickly had Morgan. And so I think having that really grounded me and kept me from the negative behaviors,
mm-hmm.
but it also kept me from healing. Mm-hmm. And it was probably when Morgan was about 3 that I finally broke, yeah. and was contemplating suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing major. It was just like I was at home. I was isolated because I was a stay-at-home mom. I didn't have any friends. You know, things were not going well with my marriage. And then I had never done any sort of healing or therapy or anything about all of this trauma I had experienced. And so I think it was right about when Morgan turned 3 that I was able to kind of take a step and take a breath and everything just like hit me. And I was like, oh, this sucks. You know?
Yeah. I think that's absolutely crazy too, is, you know, a good point to highlight here is one thing that shocks me with people who have that type of trauma that you dealt with and they don't end up turning to substances, because you know this is a recovery from substance abuse podcast, is shocking to me. You didn't lean on alcohol or any sort of drugs or anything?
No, nothing. And I was around it a lot.
That's wild to me. You would think you know, because yeah. a lot of people want to numb that shit out. And yeah. so from what I can gather, it kind of looks like, you know, you instantly like okay, you found your ex-husband, and then it was like, okay, this is what I'm gonna focus to distract me.
Yeah,
from absolutely. Everything that I've been through, I'm gonna be the best mom in the world. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I'm gonna do that. That's gonna make all of this go away.
Yeah.
And so you hit. So one day it just all of a sudden it came back, and you're just like, holy shit! Like, you know, boom.
I think what really kind of triggered it was so when I moved out, was kicked out, moved out, ran away, whatever we want to say at 17. Like I didn't hear from the family at all until I was pregnant with Morgan, and okay. Jan reached out. Keep in mind, I still hadn't found my birth family up to this point. I hadn't found Nancy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had this long period of time where I had no family at all. And I was hyper focused on mine and my ex-husband's family. I really grew attached to his family because, you know, despite the fact that my family that I grew up with sucked, I was used to having a lot of family around all the time. So it was yeah. super weird to be isolated.
Now, shout out Susan Strong. I love you. She listens to this podcast on occasion. So shout out Susan.
Yeah, absolutely. Susan and Larry, they were like the worst part of my divorce is that I didn't get to keep them as parents.
They are awesome.
They are great. So, anyway, Jan reached out to me when I was pregnant with Morgan.
Okay.
And said, you know, a lot of things have happened. I'd like to come down and see you and, you know, make amends. Let's okay. talk.
Okay.
So she came down. And like I said, it was in December because that Morgan's was born in December. Mm. And she came down and I think it was just, gosh, I can't remember the time. Anyway, there was one day where Mike and I had a blow up fight. We're arguing about whatever it was. Yeah. It was long and exhausting. And my mom had been, she just kind of sat outside on this outdoor bench of the house that we lived at and kind of give us some time. And after our argument had subsided, I went out and I sat with her. And, you know, it had been like a long fight. It was like an hour and a half. I was exhausted. We had gone out Christmas tree shopping. So it had been, you know, we'd done a lot already.
You got three kids. Out. Yeah.
Yeah, the kids, everything was going on. So I came out and I sat down on the bench next to her. And she asked if everything was okay. And I told her everything was fine. Sorry, I'm getting like this weird sunspot.
It's okay.
And she started to say, you know, I know I made some mistakes in your childhood, and mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about that. And I owe you some apologies. But I was exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I said, we need to talk. We absolutely do need to talk, but I am exhausted. It's been a long day. Can we just go in, put up our Christmas tree, and, you know, talk tomorrow?
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, that's fine. And then we never had the talk.
Mm.
And she was hyper jealous of Susan and Larry because mm-hmm. they're great. And we, you know, we went over there for Christmas and they were their wonderful selves.
Yeah.
And it made her feel like they were rubbing it in her nose that she didn't have as much money, which they weren't, because they're not like that.
No.
But she got all butt hurt and packed her things and left in a rental car on my birthday without saying goodbye.
Okay.
And then sent me an email 6 months later. We exchanged some kind of words. And the last kind of thing I said to her was, I honestly thought that she was sitting, because she was still living with him, the abuser. Up there in Alaska. And I honestly thought she was living there and relying on his money because she still didn't have a job.
Yeah.
And felt trapped. And that she didn't, that she was afraid that if she asked for my forgiveness, I wouldn't give it to her. Mm-hmm. So my last letter to her was, hey, you know what? Because we had been bickering back and forth about whatever. And I says, you know what? Let's just stop it. We have a lot. We can go back and forth forever. But none of it matters. I want you to know, if you ask me for forgiveness, I will give it to you. And we can build from here. You can be a grandparent to your grandkids, and we can go on. But I need you to acknowledge that you did wrong by me in my childhood and apologize. And that's all you have to do. And I will forgive you. And I honestly thought that like she would take that. Like I thought she was afraid of what I would say if she asked for forgiveness, if she said she was sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
And she came back with so much vitriol that I just never responded. And that was it. I was like, all right, well, I tried. You know, that was my olive branch.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't take it. And I don't know where her life is now. I don't know where any of them are now at all.
How unfortunate, right? How unfortunate, you know, it seems like, okay, hey, maybe she had like a moment of clarity or who knows what was going on in her mind, you know, because not only were we just talking about like, I mean, I hate to judge right away, but she just sounds like a horrible person. And then you had, you know, serious mental illness to it.
Uh-huh.
I've worked with schizophrenics before. That's quite a diagnosis.
Yeah.
So in adding drugs on top of that, Henry knows about that as well. You know, he had a friend who was like that, and it's just not good.
Yeah.
So I think that takes a lot coming from you to even offer that, and then to get that response. I imagine that probably hurt a little bit. You know,
I was devastated. I mean, now I can talk about it like, well, I wrote her off, you know,
but
I was devastated. I was gutted. And keep in mind, I still hadn't been to therapy for all of my trauma.
Yeah. So
that happened. all of and everything kind of came. And I think that kind of was like the trigger of like, everything sucks.
Yeah.
I've been constantly rejected, you know, that's what it felt like. And so that's what brought me. I was finally, you know, I think Morgan was probably 6 months old, and I was just, I probably was dealing with some postpartum at that point too, but, just everything came down, and I was going to be done. Mm-hmm. And, the only thing that stopped me at the time was knowing how young the kids were, they would blame themselves. Mm-hmm. No matter what, that's what happens to young kids. When something traumatic happens, you blame yourself because you don't know anything. And it doesn't matter what the adults in the room are saying to you, you internalize it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and so for me, it was like, I'm just giving my kids a different kind of trauma than what I had. And I refused to do it. And that was kind of my, I hesitate to say it on this podcast, but that was kind of my bottom. That was when I decided I needed to work on myself. I needed to be better. Just being a good mom wasn't enough to being a whole and complete person. Amen. It took a couple of tries to find a good therapist. I went back to school. I went back to work, which was kind of the death knell of my marriage, because Mike really wanted a stay-at-home wife, and I really wanted to get back out there and be productive. It didn't matter that I couldn't make as much money of him at the time. I wanted to be contributing.
Yeah.
And found a good therapist, and oh my God, the last therapist I had, I can't say enough about Dr. Yates. Shout out to you if you ever find this.
Dr. Yates, holler.
Dr. David Yates.
Hit follow.
Yeah. But one of the key things that he told me as I was kind of going through this healing journey was, you know, at this point I had my marriage had dissolved. I was a struggling single mom. Mm. As he told me, he was like, you need to start finding things that you're passionate about, that you care about, that you can fill your time with, because those kids are going to leave. That's what kids do. And when they do, if all you focused on is them for the last 18 years or plus, you're going to crash. Yeah. He's like, I can't tell you what that thing needs to be, but you need to find something and make it, you know, and start building those interests. And I'm, he gave me so many good things. Oh my God.
That's a great gem too, because you know what? He had the foresight to see that, like, hey, you know, this was, the children were the, quote unquote kind of crutch keeping you through you as you were limping along, you know, dealing with this type of stuff. And yeah, once that crutch gets taken away, we got to learn how to walk. And so that's great. You know, like I said, shout out to him, because that's really good advice, because it can, when your sole purpose is living for other people, you can see that with a lot of parents when kids do leave, that they just don't know what to do with themselves, and it can be traumatic. And then on top of everything that you had going on, I'm glad he gave you that advice. So was that when you started picking up art again, or did art always stick around? Because for the listeners who aren't privy to this, Sunshine's a great artist. She's painted, you know, a whole bunch of things. We have artwork all around our house. In particular, I have two fantastic pieces of two of my passed away chihuahuas that I cherish, that are in my house, that I love tremendously. She's got my whole side of the family on deck. My Aunt Anna still hoards a certain card that you made. She still hasn't given it out because people, I guess, aren't worthy of it yet. So you know, you have that creative spirit. Was that something that came from that?
I think so. So for me, I can never, part of having all this trauma and all of this anxiety about, you know, are the Satanists going to find me? People always talk about meditation, right? Being able to kind of quiet your brain. And I cannot just sit and quiet my brain. But when I am creating art, when I'm painting, when I'm drawing, that is all I can think about, because I'm really hyper fixated on, you know, getting the art done. Yeah, and so for me, that's meditation. Yep. And because there are no other thoughts, nothing else gets in. That's why, like, I can listen to music when I'm painting, but I can't listen to, like, I don't listen to your podcast because I won't hear it. It'll just be, you know, it'll just be noise. I can't actually hear it. Because everything is cut out. So for me, yeah, art has always been this meditative and kind of release for me. Creating has always been a release for me.
It's beautiful. I'm sorry to interrupt. I can relate to that. You know, I'm not as good as you in artwork, you know what I mean? But I do enjoy doing that. Like, there's something about doing exactly what you just described, whether it's, you know, me picking up a guitar or it's drawing my stupid little characters or now, you know, my little rosary thing that I'm making. Mm-hmm. The world shuts off, right? And Henry talks about it with the gym. The gym is his form of it. You know, he goes in and he's focused and he's locked in. That's his meditation because he can't do it. Just like you described, he can't. I mean, who knows, Henry? I'm not going to speak for you, but you're in Colorado, living the dream. But he struggles with quieting his mind. So doing that just really can lock you in, and it's just so fantastic that you found something like that.
Yeah.
So we carried on with art. I imagine that once Ash got of age and started, like, you know, growing up and moving out, was that hard for you though? You know, I imagine it still probably kind of was, right?
It was terrible. But I also recognized that it needed to happen, you know, that was always my goal, was to release fully formed humans out into the wild. that didn't, you know, weren't a suck on the public teat. I wanted, that's what I was hoping for.
Yes.
So, it was hard. Absolutely. I recognize, your parents should recognize this as well, that we are both lucky in that our kids live close to us as adults, and we get to see them frequently, and we get to see our grandkids frequently, because a lot of times kids, you know, build lives and move away. And that's normal. That's no ding on being, you guys are talking about moving to Idaho. And oh my God, you don't know the panic attack I had when you guys started talking about moving to Idaho.
My mom is still like crying about this.
Oh, I cried for a week. I cried for a week. Literally cried for a week. But then, you know, in my mind, I'm like, this is normal. Like, that's what, that happens. Like, not everybody, I'm blessed. So I try to soak it up. But yeah, when Ashley moved out, it was rough. One of the hardest things actually was to like back up when I first got divorced and the kids, I was doing, you know, they were doing mom's house, dad's house. The days that they were at their dad's house, for months I cried every weekend that they were at their dad's house. Not that they were, I knew, you know, oh, they're having a terrible time. They were with their dad, right? Mm-hmm. But I, oh my God, it's crazy, especially as kids are older, you know, they're in elementary school and there's multiples of them, you know, they're three, they're not really hanging out with you 100% of the time, but just them not being in the house, you know, the energy is different. And it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible.
I can actually attest to that. Like the two times that, you know, I've been around here where like the kids are gone with Ash for like the night or something like that. Like you don't even know what the fuck to do with yourself. like you literally don't. Like I'm like sitting around, be like, oh yeah, people are like, oh, you got the house to yourself, bro, sweet dude. And I'm like yeah, it's gonna be fucking awesome. I'm gonna play video games, we're gonna go back in time, it's gonna be great. And then, like, you know, it gets around bath time that I'd normally be bathing the kids, and I'm like, dude, I'm fucking sad. Where are my kids? You know what I mean? Like, and then I'm like laying in bed, like snuggling a pillow and shit. Like, it's terrible.
Yeah, weird. So,
yeah, it's odd, right? Like, you think you want it, but then, like, lo and behold, when they're not there, it's like, holy shit. So I get why that would be a big issue for dealing with, you know, the divorce and all that. And did that, you know, this is kind of random, but did the divorce end kind of amicably, or was it hostile?
It started off.
I'm just curious.
We kind of went back and forth, you know, we used a mediator, but you know, you've met him he has a kind of a big ego, and
yes,
everything was just kind of, you know how he is, where it has to be his way.
Correct.
So, you know, California, when it's an uncontested divorce, it's there's a formula. You know, they put in the salary of one person, they put in the salary of the other person, percentage of time that the kids spend, and it spits out a number, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I signed away alimony. I didn't want alimony. All I wanted was out, and I wanted child support. And he didn't want to give child support because he didn't want to have to write a check to my name. So that was his biggest kind of sticking point.
Yeah.
And, you know, shout out again to my former in-laws. I think they had a talk with him about it, saying, quit being a dipshit.
A tight ass. Yeah.
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 And so, you know, it was, so the actual legal process was pretty smooth. But I think the hardest thing was for him was letting go of control. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was letting go of giving control. You know, another gem from Dr. Yates was during that time, I was constantly complaining about, oh my God, I always have to save a seat for him at the kids' things. And I have to do this for him. And I have to do that for him. And, blah, you know, all these things. And Yates was like, Sunshine, he's only taking what you're giving. Stop giving that. Stop. You don't have to do that for him. He's got another wife. He's got a new wife now. Let her do it. Like, you don't have to do that. You don't have to listen to him. He can't mandate to you. He can't tell you what is going to go on at your house.
Yep. Yep.
And and I think one of the beauty of divorce, Sunshine, is that you don't have to care what he thinks.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, you're right.
Yeah, Dr. Shout out. Actually, shout out Dr. Yates again. Boundary Central. Henry's over there. He has a boner right now, dude. Boundary Central, man.
That absolutely.
We gotta set him and hold tight. And it sounds like you did that.
Yeah, well, but it took me a little while. I think we were probably 2 years into our divorce. Mm. Post-divorce.
Yeah.
When we had this conversation, it was the first year that the kids were not gonna go to day camp during the summer. They were all old enough to stay home during summer break.
Okay.
And the first week of summer break was at his house. And so the second week of summer break, they come back to my house and it's, I don't know, Sunday, whatever day, I can't remember. We used to go week to week. So whatever day it was, they came back. And he calls me and tells me, okay, so here's the schedule for the kids. They still need to get up at, you know, whatever time, regular time, like it was school. Still need to get up at 7. They have to do chores until 10. They have to do this until, and then between 3 and 4, before we get home from work, they can have free activity time. And I was like, that's not happening, Mike.
Yeah, bro. What are you talking about?
Like, it's summer break. I'm not doing any of that. And
absolutely not, dude.
I'm like, they have to keep their room clean and that's about it.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he was kind of busting a gasket. And I was like, look, I'm willing to compromise with you. Maybe a couple of hours of some, you know, structured stuff.
Yeah.
And he was like, there's no other compromise. It's either this, it's this, it's my way. And then I busted out Dr. Yates' line. And I said, the beauty of divorce, Mike, is I don't have to care what you think. And you can imagine how well that went over.
Oh, dude. But that reminds me of the Kelly Clarkson song, dude. Like, some people wait a lifetime for a moment like this.
Oh,
like,
great.
Oh, dude, that's a nuclear bomb.
Oh, it was
that's
awesome.
Fantastic.
He exploded. I hung up and I went back into the house and didn't worry about it.
Yeah.
And my heart was racing because I had never.
It feels wrong, right? Yeah, he stood up for himself.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, this is bad. This is bad. And it was a rough couple of months, but eventually he got it. And, you know, he never tried to mandate at my house again.
That's such an interesting dynamic, right? Like, because one wants to do the other. I have some friends who have the same type of similar like situation, and it's, you know, one parent can never do the one thing right and the other one. And when they come together, like kind of like, you know, I got to bring up Hen again. It seems like they have a collective, you know, goal, right? Like, hey, we're just going to raise a human at the best that we can and do that. And it seems like it kind of went that way further. But yeah, I can imagine the first part being pretty contentious. Ash tells me that it was.
Yeah.
Ash tells me that it was. That it was this and then that and that and this and yada, 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 yada. Yeah. Now, I do have another question for you because, so we went to therapy and it sounds like we got some really good tools from a really good therapist, if I'm being completely honest. I experience random things that, you know, quote unquote, trigger me because, you know, I deal with anxiety and depression. You know, I've talked about that on here pretty regularly. And I have random life experiences that kind of trigger the shit out of me. Do you have anything that just happens in day-to-day life that might send you back to that childhood? Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I interrupted you.
No. I'm doing what I do all the time where I lay out a 500-point question and I don't ever let you answer. So please answer.
I don't have things that hit me randomly like that, but there's things that I just can't handle. So an example is movies, fictional movies, where the parents are really bad.
Okay.
Or the kids are being abused in a realistic way. You know, it's not like a tentacle monster, it's a person, you know.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, you know, abuse stories are really hard for me. I don't enjoy it. It's not, you know, like I enjoy horror movies. So it's not like, oh, I don't like horror movies. I do, but if it's a kid thing, I can't. And then there's just a couple of like ways that might be touched. A lot, but I'm really hypersensitive. Sorry. I'm really hypersensitive. It's the squirrels. Yeah. Hypersensitive to, like we talked about the Michael Jackson thing, right?
I was going to bring it up. We stand in solidarity, right? We stand in solidarity. Michael Jackson. Why are we listening to Michael Jackson?
Yeah. And I'm really triggered by that. You know, I'm like, why? And like my, you know, asshole cousin that used to live with me, he used to, you know, but Michael Jackson is great. Can't you separate? And I was like, no. And why? I have told you it triggers me. I don't like it. I'm not appreciative. Why are you continually pushing me to feel okay about this fucking kid toucher? Like, why?
Yeah, dude. Like what? I mean, I've never understood it. Like I said, I think we talked about that a long time ago on this episode on this pod, but like, yeah, Man in the Mirror, I listened to it. And then all of a sudden one day I had like this epiphany and I was like, why the fuck am I listening to this fucking child, you know, molester? And then I looked around and I'm like, why is everybody like still enamored with this child molester? Like we crucify everybody else, right? Like R. Kelly's in prison. But somehow Michael Jackson got a free pass and it's okay. And we'll play his music and people will dance and everybody's moonwalking and shit. Be like, dude, like this guy was molesting children. And the fact that you're okay with that by supporting his music is fucking mind blowing to me. So yes, I stand with you on that. Michael Jackson can kick rocks.
Yeah. So, and I think I'm hyper aware of situations that are inappropriate, because of what I lived through. Like, I remember when I was 16, we were living down here in an apartment complex in Rancho, and there were a bunch of us teenage girls, you know, running in a pack. Yeah. And there was a guy who was, I don't know, in his 30s. And he was, you know, invite all the teenage girls over to his place to watch movies and hang out and chill, you know.
Dazed and Confused style, right?
And you know, but don't tell your parents. And, you know, of course, they thought it was cool, right? They're 15, 16. They thought it was cool. And I knew that it wasn't because that's not, you know, that's a 30-year-old. We're children. Yep. No adult wants to just hang out with kids. And so, it didn't take me long to go home and tell.
Yeah.
And the girls hated me, but the police were involved and like it turned out this guy was a full-on predator. And so not surprising, right? As looking back on it. You know? And so I see that a lot. And when I see it and people are kind of like, oh, that's not really that, you know, they overlook it. They overlook the red flags of that sort of thing. That really irritates me and makes me mad.
Well, I can see why. I'm sorry, because that's exactly what happened to you, right? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I'm being abused here. And everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, not Jimmy. He would never do such a thing. Well, Jimmy is, and Jimmy will, and Jimmy will continue to do it until somebody fucking believes this story. So I get, I imagine you probably have a pretty keen eye for that type of shit now that I sit here and think about it.
I feel like I do.
the vibes are off, right?
Yeah, like, I feel like I'm hyper aware of that kind of aura. When somebody is being inappropriate, you know, and it just think about as an adult, who as an adult, who needs to hang out with a teenager? Like,
nobody.
That's not normal.
Yeah, no.
Being friendly, being, you know, hey, that my, to my kids, my friend's teenager kids, absolutely.
Yeah.
Not being a total dick to a teenager, sure. But inviting them over to hang, you know, Netflix and chill, nope.
Yeah, that's out of bounds, right? Yeah, yeah. Like the red flags need to be going off.
Yeah.
Well, that's just a crazy fucking story, Sunshine. I mean, holy shit.
A battle with the devil in there. There's a bunch of, you know, random.
Me being a Catholic, I'm curious. Did we have exorcisms and shit? I mean, what was going on over there?
No, but there was one point I think I was 14, and Jan said she was done with the devil.
Okay.
That she was going to have it out.
Good for her.
That it was either him or her, and so she was going to, I don't know, go into a trance.
Exercise yourself.
Call him out and have him, you know, interact with me and the woman, the Mormon woman that she was still with. Kathy was her name.
Sweet.
And we were given strict instructions because we were sitting in the living room. There was a fire in the fireplace. It was dark. It's like a seance. I don't know.
I guess doing like a seance and shit. Wow.
I don't know. It was like 16. Holy and 15. And she told us, no matter what, don't, like, interact with the devil.
Yeah.
Right. No matter what crazy shit goes down. We're like, okay. So we're sitting, you know, on the floor. I can't remember. She's saying some weird stuff and she gets up and she goes into the garage, and our garage, you know, the door from the house into the garage kind of auto locked behind her. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes out in the garage for some random reason and she tries to come back in and she can't get in because the door's locked.
Yeah.
But Kathy and I are sitting there, and we're, because we've been told don't interact, right? So we're like, what do we do? So we hear lots of banging, we hear like a power tool, like she starts to try to drill through the door.
This isn't funny. I mean,
it's
literally,
funny,
I'm,
yeah,
I mean,
sure.
I'm literally sitting here. I'm like trying to. I'm like laughing at like a mentally, you know, somebody with a mental illness. But what are we doing?
Yeah, yeah.
We're out there, got the chainsaw
like
running.
I'm like, what the hell is she figuring? Like, how is she trying to get in, right? So there's some kind of power tool, might have been a drill, whatever. And that stops, and then she takes, I don't know, a rock or something, and there's a window, like, next to that door. And so she threw a brick or something through the window.
Sweet.
And that's when I was like, that's it, I'm out. And I go to my room, because she had said, hey, if it gets too much, just go to your room. So I go to my room and I'm in the bed and I have the covers over my head and I'm just hunkered down for like, I don't know, however much time goes by. And Kathy comes in at one point and says, the devil would like to talk to you.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
And I'm like, okay. So I go into the living room, and at this point, the fire is no longer in the fireplace. There is a small bonfire in the living room floor.
Oh, okay.
And Jan is sitting there at the fire like she's at a campfire and invites me to sit down across the fire from her. And okay. So I sat down and had a battle of wits with the devil. I don't know. She asked me questions. Frankly, I think I kind of blocked a bunch of it out.
Yeah.
At one point, we had this sword for some reason that hung above the fireplace.
Oh, my God.
And she took this sword and she got it in the coals and got it really hot. I could see the metal was kind of red.
Yeah.
And just randomly, like, just brought it up, like, you know, and singed. She has a big old scar on her forehead, singed her forehead with
she
this.
Just branded her forehead?
Yeah, fuck, I don't know.
Oh, my God.
So anyway, we had this long conversation. And at the end, she was like, you've done very well, Sunshine. I'm going to let you have your mother. And I'm like, fuck, okay. And I went back to bed. So I guess I had a battle of wits with the devil and I won. So,
okay, dude, the devil went down to Georgia. She didn't even have to bust out her fiddle. I mean, holy shit. So here's another fun fact. My mother-in-law has bested old Satan. This is fantastic, dude.
It's good to have on your side, man.
That is good. Hey, I'm glad. I'm glad to hear it. I mean, I feel like this conversation could go on for a trillion hours. Might have to have a part two, because I bet you Hen's going to hear this and he's going to be groveling.
He's like, I'm going to need to ask some questions.
Yeah, dude, that's fucking crazy.
I told you there was so much.
That's so crazy. So, hey, like I said, we could go into that forever.
Yeah, we'll go on. We'll move on.
We'll move on for one thing. So before we get out, because we're running, we're rolling here. We're at 55 minutes. I don't want to take too much of your Sunday. You had the pleasure of dealing with me in active addiction. Now, this isn't, like I brought up in the pre-show, this isn't like an ego stroke for our listeners. This isn't me like trying to say, oh, hey, it was, you know, he was a complete fucking shipwreck, and then all of a sudden now he's the best person in the world, because that's the farthest thing from the truth. But I always do like to hear, you know, people who had to deal with me, some outside sources or some outside information, like kind of what it was like, because it gives me a better understanding of my addiction. So, Sunshine, what was your first impression of me, and when did you kind of start seeing red flags that, hey, maybe old Cam Cakes here drinks a little too much?
I didn't know if it was drinking too much, but I knew something was up when you were first dating. Like I said, I'm hyper aware of not just bad vibes, sexual abuse, just it's not a good situation. Mm-hmm. And nothing that she said when you guys were first dating gave me the impression that you were an upstanding human being. But
I wasn't at the time.
Right. And but I also recognize that when you tell someone that from the outside, they're not very open to it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I would listen and be supportive and offer soft advice when I could. Mm-hmm. But I wanted her to still have someone she could come to talk to without feeling like she was being judged for staying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, being around you when you came into my house was rough. Yeah. You know, you were loud. You were very, I think you touched on it, a few episodes ago. I don't know. I'm kind of, behind, but
touchy
and aggressively, you know, especially I think with Brandon, because, you know, a lot of boys have sort of a wrestle sort of, affection level growing up, you know, and you had a brother, and maybe roughhousing was kind of a love language.
That was a big thing for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And Brandon grew up with sisters and, you know, did not have that and doesn't like it. And so, you know, I think that it was out of trying to connect with Brandon. You weren't being aggressive, like, you know, fuck this guy, I'm going to punch him. No. I think you thought you were showing him affection.
Yes.
And he was like, don't fucking punch me in the arm. Don't, you know, please stop. Poking my belly. Stop tagging on my beard. Fucking stop.
I swear to God, man. One of my buddies, man, he would get so fucking mad, man. Like, cause I'd do those aggressive backhand slaps whenever I'd tell a zinger that was, you know, somehow funny in my mind. And he would literally be like, yeah, bro. And he'd punch me back. Yeah. And he'd sit there and slap me and push me and be like, damn, dude, calm down. He's like, quit fucking hitting me, man. And be like, oh man. Yeah.
Did you ever get one of those from Brandon? Because that's
no. Brandon never pushed back. I just assumed he liked the slaps all the way up until this moment. No, I'm just playing. But no, Ash told me. Yeah, I figured as much. And you know, this kind of came around like once I started drying out. Like hey, like, you know, I thought, because I was just in such a fucking haze, right? That like everybody liked me, right? I always thought everybody liked me. Everybody liked me. You know, how could you not? And then lo and behold, that zinger came out. Yeah, my family couldn't fucking stand you, man. You were loud. You interrupted everybody. You were slapping everyone. You weren't really treating me very well, Cameron. Be like, oh shit. So for the listeners, you know, eventually I hit rock bottom. Right, we're not going to delve too far into the story. And Ash left. Were you trepidatious about her coming back? I'm just curious.
Oh, 1,000%.
Okay.
I almost didn't
believe that I was going to get sober. Yeah.
Yeah. Because
I was trying a lot and I was failing the whole time. Yeah.
Right. Well, that, and like I said, it's kind of like if you don't experience the negative from your choices, then there's no reason to not keep making those choices. Right. Correct. For me, that was my reasoning. And so for me, her leaving was a big negative for you. And if she was coming back that quickly, it felt like it was kind of a hollow thing for me. And we had a lot of conversations, and she told me up front, she was like, "Mom, we're not jumping right into dating, but I can't just leave him to do this alone. You know, we're not dating, but I can be there to be supportive of his journey through this." Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I tried, all I could do was support her through that. Honestly thought it was a bad idea. But my goal was to be supportive no matter what.
Yeah.
And then when she started considering, like, actually, you know, getting back into dating, with you, when you were still at your mom's and she was still with me, we had a really long heart-to-heart conversation. And one of the things she said to me was, she was like, "Mom, I just can't live with the thought of what if. Maybe I go back and we do this and it fails, but at least I'd know. But if I don't at least try, I'll always wonder, what if I had believed? What if I had tried?" And I was like, I get that. I absolutely get that. And it's worth it to not live with regret.
Yeah.
To try the thing and you know, give in and see. Yeah. And you know, thankfully, everything's been great.
yeah. Hey.
No, honestly. I've never been happier to be wrong.
Yeah.
I was 1,000% wrong. And I'm happy about that. You've the level of change. Admittedly, I don't think I've been around this closely around other people in recovery. So I don't know what it normally looks like, but I don't think that it looks like what you look like, because it seems like you've done great. You know, I haven't. And having said that, I'm not, you know, at your house in your darker moments when maybe you're struggling, but externally, you look like you're doing well. I was so touched that you came to my birthday party at a bar, and it was your first time ever at a bar. And I cried.
Yeah.
That was awesome. But I'm impressed by your level of commitment to this. I really am.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. And like I said, I promise you that wasn't me searching for compliments or anything like that. It's just, I'm just curious from the outside. And thank you for, you know, holding her accountable, because if it wasn't for that, I don't know if you and I would be having this conversation, right? And it actually kind of melts my heart that she said that, you know, she'd always have the what if. I didn't know she said that. And you know, I'm sitting here, 10 years later with Ash here, right? And I'm just like, fuck, my heart's melting a little bit. I love her even more. Recovery's, hopefully it looks something like what I do, right? Ideally, that's what was modeled to me, and it's never perfect. So, I'm super grateful that, you know, I get to share who I am with you as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like I don't get to just share it with everybody else in my life, but you know, you got to see the craziness, you got to do all this, and now we get to have great conversations like this, and I get to see you regularly, and you know, I get to see you interact with my kids, and you do a fantastic job. And that was going to be me before I get you out. I'm going to give you a good solid send off here, Sunshine, unless there's anything else you want to say. I'm going to
help you. No, I have a couple of other kind of, bits of wisdom, but if you know,
go ahead. We can keep going. I just don't want to take up the rest of your Sunday. Go ahead. What do you say?
It's kind of like, you know, there's not a segue to it, but one, it's kind of like, I feel like people might look at me and look at my story and have a question of like, how is she positive? How am I not in recovery from some alcohol, or how am I not drowning my sorrows? Right. How do I, 'cause I do have a very positive sort of outlook.
Yeah.
do.
And there have been a couple of things that have kind of gotten me there. And again, it was therapy. I can't say enough good about therapy. Therapy. No way. And yeah. Don't be discouraged if you find not the greatest one the first time, because not everybody is the best at their job. Is that one of the things he told me, because I had, I've had a very traumatic history with, dating dudes, mm-hmm, whatever, mm-hmm, won't go into a lot of that, but I had a particularly bad experience with someone who was like my first serious boyfriend. And then I ran into him, post-divorce, and I thought we were, I had been dying to run into him and show him how great I was after we broke up. Yeah. And then, we kind of hooked up once or twice, and then he, ghosted me, and I was devastated, and kind of had this conversation with my therapist, Dr. Yates. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got in, it was only 3 days later. So I was devastated, but it was quick. I was devastated for like 2-3 days. By the time I got to his office, I was feeling okay again. And so for me, that was kind of like, that was what I wanted to talk about, was like, yeah, does that mean I'm manic? What does this mean?
Yeah.
And he said, he's like, all of us carry around with us a bag with our pain in it. Mm-hmm. And when we experience pain as adults, we kind of sit down with that bag and we sort through it all to know where this bit of pain should fit with all the rest of the stuff. And he said, your bag of pain is almost exclusively filled with stuff about men.
Yeah.
So he's like, it's not surprising that when you experience what some people might think is a minor, kind of trauma, we'd only hooked up for like 3 days or whatever, and I was devastated.
Yeah.
He's like, it doesn't matter that it was only 3 days. It's because you're sorting it through your whole bag of all of this trauma from men. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it felt so heavy. Yeah. And then he's like, but it's a testament to you that you were able to sort it and put it back in your bag. And, 2 or 3 days later, you feel fine because you've sorted it and you've kind of moved through it. So he's like, quit beating yourself up about that process. That's a natural process. And so, I don't know, for me, that always really resonated with me that, we're all kind of carrying around our bag of pain, and that's why it might affect us depending on what's in our bag.
It's a great thing to say too, because it's actually really true. We all kind of have that, and it's kind of weird how we can kind of organize it too. Kind of like what he was saying, right? Like, mm-hmm, hey, here's my level 10 trauma, right? And that's on shelf one. And then, ooh, this kind of hurt my feelings. That can go on shelf 9, and then vice versa, down. So yeah, you hypothetically probably put that, probably felt like a level 9 right away. And then 2 days later, you're like, all right, I'm going to put it, it's going to go down here at number 1. I'm
okay. Right.
And it's about processing that stuff and being able to sit with it, right? Like, mm-hmm, it's being able to be like, okay, hey, yeah, this has happened. I don't like the way it feels. And I really wish it didn't happen, but it did. And am I gonna ruminate on it and let it continue to destroy me? Or are we gonna push on like I always have? And it sounds like you found a very good way of doing that. Do you still kind of practice that today?
I do. But I think my next little nugget is what kind of gets me through and keeps me in my headspace that I'm in. Okay. It's mostly about personal relationships, but I use it in public spaces, in all relationships, all interactions. If somebody, and I'll just use my partner as an example. Okay. I have a long distance relationship. So shout out to Brian. So our relationship is based almost exclusively on communication. We talk on the phone, we text, we email, we're constantly communicating because we can't see each other.
Yeah.
And there are times where, especially in text or email, where you don't hear someone's tone, yeah, where something they said could be either a positive, could lean positively, or it could be a negative thing, right? Like maybe just something innocuous like, oh, what are you doing tonight? For example, the negative of that could be like, oh, he's being jealous. He's saying, what are you doing tonight? Right. But yep, the positive could be like, oh, he's interested. He's just curious what I'm doing with my time. Right.
Yeah.
And that's something that's innocuous, but we do it every day. We interpret stuff every day. And for me, I consciously, even if I feel myself interpreting something that could be negative, I force myself to think of it the negative or the positive way, because it just as easily could be that. And when it's a personal relationship like Brian, it's easy, because all I have to remind myself, this man loves me. Why would he be shitty, right?
That's
an easy one. Of course he's being on the positive side, not the negative side.
Yeah.
But in interactions with people in daily life, you know, somebody cuts you off in traffic. You don't know their story. Maybe they're an asshole. Maybe they're in a rush on their way because their partner's at the hospital. Maybe, you know, they just got a call that their kid is choking, you know, whatever. You don't know. It could be anything. So why surround myself with that negative energy by accepting that it's always the negative thing? Because then I'm just going to be negative and put out more negative energy. And it's just going to, you know, so I'm really committed to putting out positive energy, because I feel like you get what you give.
You know what? You do that very well. You do that very well, which is why I wanted to have you on here, was exactly for that reason. Not only was I just nosy and curious, I wanted to hear about all these wild, wacky stories that absolutely blew my fucking socks off, but it's the way that you carry yourself. And so I knew there had to be some secrets in there. You know what I mean? And that is actually a really hard skill. The one that you just mentioned, that's a really hard skill for us humans to do. Because it, initially, like you said, initially our first response is always to go to the negative. Always. It's a survival mechanism.
Yeah.
It's a survival mechanism. So it's hardwired in our brains to think that it's always going to be terrible right away. And to be able to be mindful of that. So yeah, I we need to take back that you don't do any meditation or mindfulness shit. Like you do it on the daily, because you know, that type of outlook is selectively choosing, going, hey, okay, hey, this could be interpreted this way, but guess what? I'm going to interpret it this way, and I'm going to maintain this positive attitude. And that's why you radiate the same type of energy that is very contagious. You know, you see it with your friend group nowadays. You know, people want to be around you. I enjoy my time with you, you know, and it's because you have that positive outlook despite your trials and tribulations. And you should be really fucking proud of yourself. You should be really fucking proud of you. I am, because we all have a story, and yours is fucking a lot crazier than mine, dude. and a lot more than a lot crazier than, and I've heard some shit in the rooms, but you know, like that's wild stuff. Sitting down with the devil and fucking doing crazy shit. But yeah, that's a great nugget. That's a great nugget. How are we going to twist it? I mean, are we going to choose? Because we're consciously in charge of that, right? Like we're consciously in charge of that. You can sit there and be like, oh, this asshole's trying to micromanage me. He thinks I'm cheating on him or something. Yada, yada, yada. I'm now pissed off. And boom, 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 negative. Or maybe he's just genuinely curious on, hey, what am I doing? He's trying to have a conversation and talk with me because he cares about me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. So... anyway, sunshine, I will
feel satisfied now. I got out what I needed to get out.
Okay, good, good, good. I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just trying to be conscious of your time.
No, I'm good.
Yeah, but this has been really fun. Did you? I hope you have a good time.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It feels good to do this, right?
It does. I'm sorry, I keep like moving to get out of the sun spots.
I've been feeling bad for you. I think that was part of the reason I was trying to get you out of here.
I still feel afraid out here. So.
Good, 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 good. But. Yeah, it's almost like therapy. You can call me Dr. Yates moving forward. All right. So I do want to send you off with a compliment or 10 for everything that you have overcome and everything that you share with us. Thank you so much. And I want to say you have done one hell of a job of pushing through, powering through all of that. You are a fantastic mother. You're a fantastic grandmother. And it's a testament because guess what? Your kids still want to be around you. And in my eyes, that's the victory. That's the victory. We aren't inclined or ordered to see our parents once we turn 18. And the fact that they still want to come over and see you for Sunday night dinner like we did last week and all the time. And, you know, my daughter wants you to come over on Thursdays to come see her. All these things is because of it's a testament to who you are as a person. So I'm sorry that those things happened to you, but you know what? I'm also not sorry because it made you who you are today. And that is a vibrant, loving, wonderful person. So thank you so much for coming on here. Thank you for giving me another chance after I dried up. I mean, I thank you for telling Ash to leave because I was a hot mess. I love you very much. So thank you, Sunshine.
I love you. Thank you so much.
Okay. And I will kick you out now, and then this will come on tomorrow, and Sunshine's going to do what everybody else has to do. She'll share it with all her friends, and then we'll sit here and we'll talk, and I'll give her an even bigger hug than I normally do when I see her, because now I know that she had a battle with the devil. I got to make her a stronger rosary. So Sunshine, have a good rest of your Sunday. I love you very much. I'll talk to you soon.
Love you. Bye.
Holy shit, man. You know what? I had ideas. I had thoughts. I was like, oh, hey, I know that there were some things because we had talked about these things in passing, right? Like, oh, hey, I always assumed, you know, she was adopted. And we didn't even get into when old Nancy, her mom, you know, came back into the picture. There's a trillion questions that I still have. But I hope you guys really enjoyed that, because it's a real story of overcoming an absolute shit show of an upbringing. And it's a great, great highlight. I mean, it's a great, fuck, how do I even want to say this? It's a great episode because it really does highlight that there really is no excuse and that you can turn your life around. You can. You know, we're talking about a child that was kidnapped by a schizophrenic who was on drugs and alcohol, was fighting the devil, was being sexually assaulted, then, you know, got kicked out, basically ran away, didn't actually turn to substances, which is actually the fucking wildest shit of that whole entire story. Maybe it's because I'm an alcoholic that I just literally can't fathom, like, you know, having to go through that type of shit without being absolutely fucked up. But hats off to you, Sunshine, because that's fucking incredible. But being able to go, you know, have kids, get married, go through a divorce, and then have the mental fortitude after, you know, what I know is a very scary and dark time. You know, when you're having thoughts about killing yourself, that's not a fun place. And we didn't really get into that too much. But from personal experience, that's not a fun place to be. And if any of our listeners have had those thoughts and actually had those thoughts, like not just an intrusive one that floats by saying, hey, I'm going to jump off this bridge. Actual contemplation is no joke. And if you are having those thoughts, please, there is help out there. That's never the option. And Sunshine, and the caveat to that, Sunshine and myself are living proof of that. Another great point in this podcast that I really, really liked was just, it's just her overall outlook on life. You know, she got that little nugget in, but that actually couldn't be farther from that. That's the most truthful part of Sunshine is you see her, she's got a smile, she's positive, she's warm, she's welcoming. And everyone wants to be around her. Everyone wants to be around her. I mean, you guys should see her. She gets after it with her little hiking group. I might link her social media. You can follow her hiking exploration. She'll make you feel bad about yourself when you're sitting on the fucking couch all day. Cause she sure as hell makes me feel bad. But she's just a great, wonderful person. And I'm honored to have her as my mother-in-law. And I'm glad that she overcame what she overcame, because her oldest daughter is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And that's a fact, Jack. And so if you can't find something out of this episode, there's something fucking wrong with you, and you need to hit replay and re-listen to it again, because you really don't have any excuses. Nobody. You don't. And this is me calling you out. You're in charge of your destiny, and you can change. We all have something going on. We all do. And that was re-highlighted in this episode. And it's from sitting down and even having a conversation like this. You know, this could go back to even Deb's episode, you know, multiple people that we've interviewed on this podcast. You know, if I was to see these people walking in the grocery store, I would have no fucking clue. Just like, ready? Here's the funniest part of this whole fucking thing. I've been around Ash for 10 years and I didn't know half of that, right? I mean, we're branding our heads with swords and having, you know, trials of the soul with Satan and all this crazy shit. I mean, I didn't know that. And how would you overcome that as a child, right? Like, you know, when you sit here and you talk with people, then you find out how they did it. And then it helps you, you know, get new skills. And maybe it puts your life into a different type of perspective. You know, like, holy shit, man. Well, you know, not saying that my problems aren't real. You know, they are. But it could be worse. Could be worse. And people don't like that saying, but you know what? It's true. It really is. I mean, fuck me, man. That's a heavy fucking episode, but I hope you guys could really feel her vibes throughout the entire episode, because ready, it maintained positivity the entire time. So don't rest on your laurels. I will reiterate what Sunshine said. If you are having trouble with anything, any sort of trauma, if you've been sexually abused or you're having suicidal thoughts, please reach out to a therapist. And another great nugget she said, if you don't find the first one, you don't vibe with them, get a fucking new one, man. Get a new one. You know, that's fine. If it's going to be somebody that you are going to delve all your sensitive information to and you're trying to heal, make sure it's somebody you feel comfortable with, you know, that you want to sit down with and you can go, okay, hey, I can, here's my treasures. Here's my bag of shit, like we talked about. So absolutely incredible. Like I said, surprise, Henry, I'm going to be in Fort Bragg next week. So I don't know what the hell we're going to do. Hey, maybe I'll hop on from the beach, my guy. I might be up there on Glass Beach. We'll be throwing rocks. It looks like it's going to be misty. It's going to be like 58 degrees. I'm going to be living the dream. I'm going to be in sweaters and jeans, not like Greece. There's going to be jeans going on in Fort Bragg in July. So that should be absolutely fantastic. So that's that. What should you follow us on? On the whatever platform you're listening to, please hit the follow button, share it with a friend, share it with a family member. Sunshine's going to share it. All of Sunshine's friends, as you're listening to this and you realize, holy shit, you know what? That camera guy is pretty fucking cool. And you know what? Sunshine's even cooler than I thought, because look at all the shit she went through. Holy shit. Hit follow, share it. This is what we do here at Rude Dude. And we're trying to help people one episode at a time. That's about all I have. So I will finish it. This is always fun when I'm by myself. I will finish it like I always do. I love you, Hen. I love you, Sunshine. Thank you very much for coming on. That was fucking fantastic. And I think I say this all the time, I think we're going to have you back on, because I think there's some more nuggets in there that you just don't even know you have. And then Henry says, be yourself and fuck what they think. And I go and get a therapist and talk to somebody. Later, dude. Also, this is going to be unedited, so deal with it. Woo!